The question is not to drink or not to drink. It's not black and white. It's not one or zero. But the question is, what should my relationship with alcohol be like? Welcome to the WADT podcast. Do you drink? And by that, I mean alcoholic drinks like beer, wine, and different kinds of spirits. Singaporeans consume on average around 2 liters of alcohol each in 2018, which was among the lowest in Asia Pacific. Now, this was partly due to the heavy taxation of alcoholic beverages in Singapore. But even so, health officials were concerned about a rise in unhealthy habits among the young because of the harm alcohol has on the body. In this episode, we will reveal the truth about alcohol so that you will be better informed the next time you have a drink. Well, joining us today again is Eugene Chong, clinical psychologist from the Seeding Minds. Welcome, Eugene, and of course to you, Eugene. Hafiz. Yep. Good to see all of you again.
Nice to see you.
Okay, today we're talking about alcohol. Let me first ask you, do you know what alcohol really is? What is another name for alcohol?
I think that the main ingredient, scientifically, is ethanol, right?
That's right.
Okay. Because this particular thing, when you take in, all right, in certain amount or in any amount at all, it will affect the function of your brain. That's little I know.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah. Ethanol is something that you use as a additive in sports car engines and rocket engines to enhance, to magnify the combustion in those engines to give you more power. All right. So imagine if you're putting ethanol, you know, such a substance into your body, you can imagine what it actually does in your body. In other words, it basically burns you from inside out. Now, I speak this from, I want to say personal experience, but not because I have been an alcoholic, but I've seen alcoholics. I've lived 10 years in one of the Central Asian countries where vodka, you know, is drunk like we drink tap water in Singapore. All right. So, you know, and vodka is sold in 100 grams. All right. So you just drink 100 grams, you know, just a little cup, like a shot, you just drink it, you know, and you don't even have to buy the whole bottle. Okay. And so people would drink and drink and drink and then, you know, get drunk and they will sleep in the park. And sometimes they forget that it is in the middle of winter. So they sleep in the park on a park bench and, you know, they die there because of the cold, you know. And I have this friend, a local friend there, who, you know, when I first met him, he had a very dark complexion. So I thought, you know, he must have been working out in the sun, you know, all day long, right? He's a Kazakh. And so, you know, Kazakhs are nomads. They are basically shepherds. They look after flocks of sheep and cows and things like that. So I thought because he spent a lot of hours a day out in the sun and therefore he has this suntan. But actually the truth is, no, that's not why he has this dark complexion, all right? He has this dark complexion because he was an alcoholic. He drank a lot of vodka. And so he was basically burning from the inside out, okay? And it's gone to the extent where it's now affecting his pigmentation on the skin and giving him this dark complexion. And then later on, he recovered from his alcoholism and I saw firsthand the transformation, you know, his complexion became fair, which is actually the normal complexion for a Kazakh. Kazakhs are generally fair, okay? They are as fair as a European or Caucasian, okay? Fairer than Singaporeans, you know? So I saw the transformation from a very, you know, suntan, you know, dark complexion guy, okay, because of vodka drinking, and to a fair-skinned Kazakh, all right, after he has recovered from his alcoholism. So I've seen it firsthand.
Okay, so Paksen and Eugene, why people drink alcohol?
Well, I think
because
there
I
are
ask
many
you because me. I don't drink.
I also don't really drink alcohol per se, but occasional, probably celebration, then probably alcohol will be consumed. But I think generally within the Singapore context, right, most people drink alcohol is more within the social context. That's what I can observe and see. But suppose that it's beyond the social context, right, there are some reasons that within my practice that I do see people who come to look for or require therapy is because they tend to use alcohol as a masking effect. So for example, they may be experiencing some form of depression or some form of anxiety. Alcohol helps them to soothe their anxiety because it reduces the tension and it helps the body to relax. So I think it probably is a substance that they tend to use to manage what they are actually going through. So I think that is one of the points I want to make.
Yeah, I think a lot of people use alcohol as a stress relief method, all right? And in social settings, you know, alcohol has, you know, been proven to lower your inhibitions, you know, and so you feel more free to open up and to have conversations and things like that, especially for shy and introverts. It helps, you know. But so the question now is, you know, if you, without alcohol, can you still have a conversation, all right? Can you, do you still have that boldness? And so I think there's something deeper than that. But yeah, those are ways around some of the things that they feel, you know, are missing in their lives. And so they use alcohol to kind of get around it.
So it means that when you drink alcohol, what appear is not you, is someone else. I mean, not the personality that you naturally behave with, right? So another thing that I want to bring up, right? I think we are fortunate in Singapore that there are a lot of laws against drinking alcohol in terms of protecting even the young, like those below 18, they cannot purchase alcohol, which is very different in many other countries. You know, I actually travel in this region, certain country, you know, that the alcohol or the beer is even cheaper than bottled water, right? Such that it becomes an addiction problem among the young, right? That's so become, right. It's so cheap, you know, it's so available, at advertisements of alcoholic drinks everywhere. It becomes a part of the culture. And what more, it can relieve stress. It makes you forget about the realities of life. For example, they are suffering poverty and even stresses in life, not because of, you know, like in Singapore, right, because we work too hard, you know, and thinking about material every time. For them, is, you know, it's more of a hardship, you know, in life that make them want to, you know, to drink such that they forget, you know, but it comes with a lot of negative effects.
That's right. And sometimes some people use it as a status symbol. And all this, we have to thank marketing for that. You know, the way products like tobacco, cigarettes, and alcohol has been marketed, all right, sends the message to people that, you know, wow, you look cool, you know, you look like, you know. So even among alcohol drinks, there's beer, and then there's a more expensive one like wine and liquor and all kinds of different spirits. So, you know, people who are more well-to-do, they will be able to afford the more expensive kind of alcoholic drinks. But, you know, for those that are maybe the younger ones, I think all they can afford is beer. So that already kind of differentiates what class you belong to. So some people use that as a status symbol.
So Eugene, drinking, I mean, alcohol and so on, especially when done in they drink a lot of it, especially, it will lead to certain health effects, right? Can you let us know, share what are those, be it physically or, you know, in other forms?
Okay, one of the key, immediacy of drinking alcohol is that you experience an immediate kind of sense of surge of energy. You feel really high. But alcohol have that effect that with that moment of experiencing the heightened kind of happiness or joy, as per se, you will go into a crash moment. So one of the so-called observation for people who drinks a lot, right, they tend to blank out. So which means that they are totally knocked out if they drink excessively, and the amount of dosage of the alcohol was consumed, right, they tend to affect their brain system. sometimes, right, in the postpartum kind of analysis for people who are alcoholism, right, there are a lot of like empty spaces in their brain mass because of the overconsumption of alcohol. Of course, not to look at the physical, so-called the physiology, the anatomy, is right? Sometimes, right, if you observe people who drinks a lot, their teeth will tend to be a bit more yellowish because of the overconsumption of alcohol as well. So different parts of our body will be affected, whether it's the liver, as what we commonly know, it will cause liver issue, liver cancer, and many, many other things. So generally, I would say that, an overconsumption of alcohol tends to lead to a lot of bodily issues from the head to the toe.
This is the WADT podcast, and thank you for listening. If you have enjoyed today's episode, be sure to like, follow, or subscribe so that you will not miss any episodes. Share the link to this episode with someone you think that will benefit from it. We want to know what you think of this episode too. Please feel free to share your comments on one of our social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can also email weareDadsToo@gmail.com if you have a question or need help. Till the next time, this is Hafiz and Parkson signing off.
Okay. So psychologically, right? I mean, you've been mentioned about DSM, you know, how do you diagnose, for example, is there a diagnosis for certain like alcohol disorder or excessive use or addiction?
Okay, this is what we call the substance use disorder, as in short called SUD. So typically these are diagnosed, this is a criteria whereby used to diagnose people with substance dependence or substance use, or maybe we call it addiction in general. So that could be ranging from different substance. Besides alcohol, there are things what we call the illegal drugs, heroin, morphine, quote unquote, cocaine, and many other things. But the key important is that the driving point will be the dependence of the alcohol of the substance, whereby the person suppose that if he or she does not consume the substance, right, there will be a lot of withdrawal syndrome. There will be a constant psychological yearning for the substance, and this is one of the key criteria that how we determine whether someone have a substance issue or substance use disorder.
Yeah, I think all kinds of substance abuse and addictions, whether it's to alcohol, to drugs, you know, to any kind, that is basically due to a need in a person's life that is not met. And so, you know, the person is kind of stumbles upon this and, you know, it happens to meet their needs and, you know, it produces the kind of dopamine in their brains. And once dopamine is produced in your brain basically tells you let's have more of that, you know, and so it becomes a habit. And we human beings, we have our very, you know, unique way of justifying our actions. So even like drinking or, you know, smoking cigarettes, we justify it by saying to ourselves, "Oh, I need this because it helps me in this, it helps me in that," and things like that. And so, yeah, then we go into this habit and then become a dependency and then becomes an addiction. Yeah, so I think that the key here is to, you know, the outcome that we want in this episode is not just to, you know, send a message that do not drink at all. Well, for those who have not started to drink, yes, our message is don't start, because there is actually hardly any health benefits. Okay, you might have read about it, you might have heard about it, that, you know, a glass of wine or two a day, all right, it actually benefits your heart health. Some people say that, but, you know, other people also say, you know, hardly so, okay, because they are talking about a certain element, certain component in wine, which comes from grapes, and that is called resveratrol. Resveratrol is something good for heart, but the amount of that substance in wine, okay, is so little. So people begin, the experts begin to question whether that quantity of resveratrol, is it really enough to give you that kind of, you know, significant heart health benefits? Okay, unless you drink a lot. then you have that benefits. All right, then the
side effects will also be a lot.
Yeah, correct. You know, so the negative then outweighs your positive. Then you might as well just eat the grapes, okay? Because resveratrol is not found in the grape; it's found in the skin of the grape. You see, so eat the grapes itself, and that's always the best advice. All right, instead of drinking apple juice, eat the apple. Instead of drinking orange juice, eat the orange. All right. So instead of drinking wine, eat the grapes.
Yeah, but once it becomes an excuse, it's different. You know, for example, even this whole debate about benefits of wine, benefits of coffee, caffeine, is a never-ending debate, you know. It depends on from which angle you are, you know, arguing from. Mm. But I think more importantly, what I was asking just now is about when it becomes a state in which you are dependent, that means your body becomes tolerant of the alcohol and you tend to take more because your body can take more of it. Because I also heard that those people who are new to drinking, they cannot even take a bit, you know, they will, you know, the body will react badly such that they don't like it. But, you know, there's also, you know, the effects of dopamine, serotonin and so on that makes that happy feeling comes. And you want to visit that again, you know, to attain that happiness. But again, once you are, your body's tolerant of it, you tend to drink more of it, and you want to go back, you know, to the same thing that you have felt before. All right. So again, it can worsen as you take more and more of it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's very true, especially for men, because the thing about the dopamine effect is that for men especially, they tend to be producing much more than the amount of women who drinks at the same time. So there are research that was carried out to do a comparison between men and women when they drink. The amount of dopamine that was being produced, men tends to produce at least 2 times more or maybe even more or 3 times more compared to women. And therefore, when a man drinks, you tend to feel much more elated compared to a woman. And that kind of elation, right, tends to reinforce the need. I think I need to drink more. So the more I drink, the more happy I feel, the more kind of like a positive sensation that goes around my body. And that's reinforced the whole thing. So that could be one of the reasons why when men drinks, it will become a bit challenging and problematic. And that's where there's a correlation. There's a correlation between over drinking or excessive drinking and violence.
I mean, yeah, because we started, you know, Park San, and we say that people drink. Why people drink? Because it's a social thing, right? Actually, in Singapore. But on the other end of the spectrum, drinking too much, and it will affect your behavior, and it will affect your interpersonal problems. You know, it will affect your marriage, your relationship with your spouse, your children. And we hear a lot of cases in which people who are drunk, you know, because they are not in their good state of mind, they do things which, as you said, maybe violence, even sexual crimes, drink driving, killing people, you know, not knowing actually, not aware of their driving dangerously, you know, and cause an accident that can kill a life, you know, because of such action. And in Singapore, I know that there's a very strict law on drunk driving, and you can be jailed, you can be fined very heavily. Yeah, and that really helps to, you know, protect the public. Yeah, who are innocent, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I read a report in published in 2018 by the Institute of Mental Health in Singapore that alcohol abuse has emerged as the second most common mental disorder in Singapore. Mental disorder in Singapore. Wow, that's a very, you know, eye-opening statement that alcohol abuse is a mental disorder. All right. So I guess you can attribute it to high stress levels and whatever not. Okay. Yeah. So just something to take note that, you know, that if you are experiencing a lot of stress, there are many, many other healthier ways of dealing with your stress, you know, like meditation, you know, that does not, you know, does not involve any cost, you know, you just sit down somewhere quiet and meditate. That has, you know, a lot of benefits. And yeah, talking to people is also another way to relieve stress, and many, many other ways, you know, besides taking alcohol, because the negatives just outweighs the positive.
Positive, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard also about withdrawal symptoms, right? I mean, you will experience, if you have been drinking so you know, regularly, and you stop drinking, you will experience some withdrawal symptoms that make you want to go back, like drugs, right? And it force you to go back in taking it again, such that you will feel okay again. So what is that all about?
Sometimes that if a drinker, if a person who drinks lots of alcohol, when they stop drinking, right, their attention span will be much, much limited. So we are not looking at a person with ADHD, but we're looking at a normal person without any such a pre-existing condition. When they stop drinking or they reduce their drinking, their body starts to react. They cannot concentrate in their work. Their mind is always fleeting. So sometimes you can see that they appear a little bit lost, a little bit spaced out, because the body is not able to adapt without the substance in the body. Just like, for example, if you take excessive Panadol, you will come to a point that this amount of Panadol is not effective anymore. The pain is still present, but even though after you ingest this amount of like pills of Panadol. So similarly with this kind of model and also logic, right, it probably goes well with the whole idea about withdrawal syndrome. So the moment you stop, your withdrawal syndrome will tend to show, because it's a very quick so-called effect on the physical body.
I see.
Yeah. So as I was saying earlier, you know, for those who have not started to drink, all right, maybe you're still underage, or you know, maybe you just don't like alcohol, well, don't start. Okay. You have no good reason to start at all. Now, for those of you who are just social drinkers, okay, or you know, if you're alcoholic, then you should seek professional help, okay? Because it's good to have your life back in order, okay? Because there's so much more you can accomplish when you're sober than when you are drunk. So for those who are social drinkers, you know, our message to you is not abstinence, okay? Although there are lots of evidence to show that, you know, alcohol is very, very harmful, okay, to your body. Now, there's a new movement that is happening in the world today, and it started by this lady called Ruby Warrington, who wrote the book Sober Curious. So she has started this club called Club Soda. Now, Soda simply stands for Sober Curious, okay, being sober curious. And what she's suggesting to people is to ask themselves this question. The question is not to drink or not to drink. It's not black and white. It's not one or zero. But the question is, what should my relationship with alcohol be like? Okay, so it's a relationship, right? You and alcohol, okay? So we need to ask ourselves, and for you parents out there, this is a question you can ask, have a conversation with your teenagers, and you know, ask them this same question, or ask them to ask themselves this same question. What is my relationship with alcohol? What kind of relationship do I want to have with alcohol? Okay, is alcohol my constant companion? Is alcohol my counselor? Is alcohol my comforter? All right, is alcohol my savior? Okay, so that's what I mean by what kind of relationship you want to have. Okay, or is it just a friend that I visit once in a while? Okay, so that's another way of reframing this this conversation, instead of just, you know, being very black and white, you know, to drink or not to drink. But ask yourself, what is my relationship?
I think that's a very, very good point in terms of like, how do you view alcohol in yourself? And also, we can also ask ourselves that, are we in control of the alcohol, or is the alcohol in control of us? That probably gives us a sense that where we are, which spectrum of drinking are we at, so that we don't go to a point whereby we are under the control of alcohol. That's where dependence comes in. Dependence and addiction.
Yeah. So if people, I mean, there are people who are addicted, right, to alcoholism, abuse, and so on. for example, you know, they come to a stage where it's a crisis, especially, right? So what kind of help can they find
I think one of the most immediate help that that is available in Singapore, there are a few organizations, but one of them, our name is under the Institute of Mental Health, under the NAMS, which is the National Addiction Services. So that's where you can actually get help in terms of all kinds of addiction, especially for alcohol. So this is where the specialists are all present to support the person who is going through this addiction condition or issues. So there will be one way. Of course, other organizations like SANA does help as well. So you can actually approach them. Suppose if you do recognize that you have such condition or you have such symptoms that has been ongoing for some years.
Yeah, there's also AA, right, in Singapore as well. I just visit the website and I think it's very non-intrusive. I mean, you can just go online and do a survey first to find out whether you're really suffering from alcoholism. You know, so again, you need to find out more about your condition, you know, and be aware of your situation first before wanting to take the next step, whether you need professional help or not, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, there are many resources, many places I'm sure people can turn to. I think the key here is to, you know, you talk about AA, right? AA uses a 12-step program, and I'm sure many other organizations use that also. Mm-hmm. The first of the 12 step is to admit that you have a problem. So that's the key, you know. So a lot of people would say, yes, I drink, you know, yeah, sometimes I drink a little bit too much, you know, I get drunk. Okay, I begin to act very irrationally and very, you know, erratically and all that kind of stuff. But generally, I still have it under control. So that's what a lot of people would say. And you know, that itself will justify or give them an excuse not to actually go for help. Mm. In other words, they have not admitted that they have a problem. Or they might say, sometimes I do lose control, but yes, generally I do. I know I still have it under control. I know what I'm doing. So I think that's the very, very first step, the key to everything else. Okay. Mm-hmm. But I think what I would say to them is, because, you know, things like that happen very subtly. You see, addictions happen very, very slowly. It's progressive. Okay. Mm-hmm. And if your mindset is, you know, is not changed, okay, then you're just going down a slope, okay, and you know, before you know it, you're way down the slope already. So it's better to, you know, do something to nip it in the bud while it's still not too late for it. You see, so it's not no shame in admitting that you might have a problem. Okay, bring it under control, have a change of mindset, get someone to help you and to hold you accountable so that you will not go further down the slope. Because otherwise, it's like, you know, you're a runaway train and nothing can stop it.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's powerful in this kind of approach that also not only talk about self-awareness and changing self-habit, but I'm sure they have groups, all right, listening to another person's experience and learning how the person have gone through difficulty and then be able to solve the problem. You know, that itself is very, very important in trying to change, especially when, you know, being an alcoholic is something that, you know, is so difficult to change. You know, it's definitely difficult, but it's not impossible, right?
Mm, that's true. So maybe for the audience out there, if you do probably notice that there are some symptoms here and there, you may want to do your own assessment. So there's this very simple assessment that I can introduce to you. You can go online to search. It's called a CAGE questionnaire, CAGE. So there are four simple questions that you can ask yourself, but honestly asking yourself. So it is a kind of like a revelation for yourself. So the first question it could be asking you is that, have you ever felt that you should cut down on your drinking? Number two, have people around you feeling annoyed by you, such as criticizing that your drinking habit has been quite excessive or things like that? Have you felt bad or guilty about your drinking? And the last question is that, have you ever had a drink first thing in the morning to even steady your nerve or to get rid of a hangover? Something they call it an eye-opener. So these are the good questions that you can do a self-assessment even before you consider what kind of other help that you would that you might need.
Mm. Okay, that's good. That's a good tip and guide. So actually, we are actually speaking with Eugene Chong from Seeding Minds today, and it's on alcoholism and or drinking. And definitely, if you feel that you are struggling with you know such issues in your life or you need help, please do not hesitate. You know to in touch with Eugene. You know at Seeding Minds, you know you can find the link in our show notes and use the promo code WADT2020 to get a 20% discount for your first two counseling sessions, and the code is valid till 31st of July 2022, which means your first the two sessions must be held before 31st July. You know, so and we'd like to thank Eugene also for going through a series of very very interesting and important topics. You know, in the Manhood 2.0, this will not be the end. We will be calling you again, because we learn a lot. You know, sitting down, you know, here I learn a lot. You know, from you, from Parkson, and I'm sure I also re-listen to the podcast. Sometimes I miss it. You know, so it's really something that really benefit. I'm sure benefit so many people out there. Thank you very much, Eugene.
Thank you, Eugene.
Right, so we come to the end of today's discussion. We hope it has benefited everyone, and hope to see and all you again, to meet all you again in our next episode. That's all. Thank you very much. Bye-bye. This is the WADT podcast, and thank you for listening. If you have enjoyed today's episode, be sure to like, follow, or subscribe, so that you will not miss any episodes. Share the link to this episode with someone you think that will benefit from it. We want to know what you think of this episode too. Please feel free to share your comments on one of our social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can also email wearedads2@gmail.com if you have a question or need help. Till next time, this is Hafiz and Parkson signing off.